Hi everyone, this is Matt Price, host of Dynasty Game Night. My co-host John Bosch and I created this podcast for one reason, to focus on fun. After all, fun is the reason we all started playing fantasy football in the first place. I love games of all sorts, card games, board games, video games, really any kind of game you can think of. So one day, John and I decided it was time for a podcast where we just play games. You might learn something along the way, but you won't find much hard-hitting analysis here. Check out all the other incredible podcasts DLF has to offer for that sort of thing. On Dynasty Game Night, our primary focus is to entertain. So if you like playing games or watching game shows, this might just be the podcast for you. We'd love for you to give it a listen and play along with the contestants and maybe even win a chance to be on the show.
Hello, welcome back to the Dynasty Crossroads. My name is Peter Howard, at PA Howdy on Twitter. This is, in fact, a member of the DLF family of podcasts. This is the fourth and, please, the final episode in a four-part mini-series of my conversation with Zach Reed from the Dynasty Dummies. We got talking about a lot of different stuff. I've just had to cut out a lot of good stuff as well. Four is enough. It's just enough. It was a really fun conversation. I've tried to keep the best parts of it for this fourth episode, where we mostly, we talk about a lot in 30 minutes, but we're going to talk about Justin Jefferson, break his game down a little bit from both sides of the aisle, and we're also going to talk about the 2020 class in general and rookie pick values in Dynasty Football. So, hope you enjoy it. Thanks again. Check us out next week, where I probably will have recovered by then. Thanks again. Talk to you again. Enjoy this last part of the interview with Zach.
I guess maybe. I figured out halfway through this, we're actually doing the podcast, by the way, so maybe this is it. So I think a way towards the conclusion, at least, is the two profiles in this class that we have mentioned before. But the ones that are clean, they're not what Rashad Bateman's looks like right now. It's not what DJ Moore's look like. They're more or less around N'Keal Harry, maybe a little better, actually, because for various different boring reasons I won't bother you about. But what I consider clean profiles, I'm like, okay, those are the two at the top. Let's move on. Now, I'm not done with Tyler Johnson and Bryant Edwards, but there were more questions on both of those profiles, even though the numbers were higher. Again, this isn't about higher means higher expectation. That's a thing. It's not that type of evaluation. But I love both those guys. I really want to see the rest of the story, and I'm probably going to end up with a lot of them. But the two clean profiles in this class from day one have always been CD Lamb and Jalen Reagor. Now, they both have a little issue because, again, there's no such thing as clean and perfect, but they're great profiles once you get to familiar looking at them. And both of them have it. It's like the ranking starts there for me. Those two are clearly the best overall profiles with virtually zero questions on them. And, you know, this is where it's fun to fade the combine because you can start adding questions in when you get to there, especially when talking about ceiling. Remember, most people questioning BMI, hand size, and 40 time, they'll point to a higher threshold. Like, you don't see top 12 seasons, or you don't see multiple top 12. You don't see Julio Jones doing that. Well, like, I quite like having Stefon Diggs. I'm good. So, mostly limits you from those higher ceilings. So that's probably something I should have mentioned when we're talking about a convey. But I've come to terms with Jerry Jeudy, and so I'm pretty sure I have him fairly locked in at three, all draft dependent, obviously. But I think given that, that's really the top of the class. That's where we're looking for the most ceiling, or the most comfort, the most likelihood, whatever. Do you disagree with any of those three?
I
obviously things will be different, but do you disagree that they they look like, I don't know, whatever you want to take that? And also, I guess the question is, who goes one?
I think CeeDee Lamb is the easy one in this wide receiver class. The profile, at least on film, that I have the most trouble with is Rager. And that's not to say that he was bad. And we've had among the dummies on our show, there's been a pretty big schism because Riley Bymaster and Matt Foreman are completely off the Rager train. They didn't see what I saw. But for me, I saw Rager be really fast. And once the ball in his hands, be a very good runner. And that's something that I look for. Again, if you're not winning down the field with the air yards, then you need to add yards after the catch. And he does that. And he also, again, double moves, you know, can make a defender look horrible. He catches the ball out away from his body, which means that when he gets hit, he's not necessarily losing the ball, because if the ball is in on you and you get hit, all of that energy goes directly in. But if you've got the ball out here, you get a little bit of a cushion. The one thing I don't like about that is he doesn't bring it in quickly. Mm. So he'll catch it out here and kind of leave it out, which you end up with balls being knocked out. And I think sometimes he tries to just completely like use his speed to get by somebody instead of reading the coverage. And if he's being given cushion, if he's being given the respect that his speed deserves, he needs to, make a play underneath and use his ability after the catch. But all in all, like I have Rager, I think right now, I don't know, 5 or 6. But again, that's with questions about Bryan Edwards. That's with questions about Tyler Johnson, where, you know, I'm with you on that. And if you were going to make me draft right now, I probably would take Rager over them just because of the questions with, is the draft capital going to be there? Is Bryan Edwards' foot going to drop, you know, his draft stock, all of that sort of thing. The one player that I really need you to talk dirty to me about, I think we're going to be a little bit at odds, is Justin Jefferson. I have Justin Jefferson as my 2 in this class, and I don't think it's particularly close. I thought he was, you know, it's CeeDee Lamb, Justin Jefferson, and then there's a big glut of very talented receivers from 3 to 7 or 8. But man, I really, really, really like Justin Jefferson, and I know people are going to knock him because he's a slot receiver. Not that that's something you'll do, because you're not watching the film. But that's going to be the big knock, is, oh, he was a slot receiver, and yeah, he was. But he also created an insane amount of separation and is good against man going down the field. He's good against man running shorter routes. He's great against zone. It really reminded me, his ability to attack zone reminded me of Juju Smith-Schuster when I watched him out of USC. And I had Juju ranked higher than a lot of people just because of his ability to be the number 2 in an offense, but eat as a number 2. And I think that Jefferson has the ability to be able to do that. You know, he's got that profile to me where if he's a number 2, he's going to be a high volume number 2. And I want that, but he can also be a 1 and beat players down the field and beat defenders 1-on-1. And I really like, this is the hill where last year I was on the hill that AJ Brown was the number 1 wide receiver in the class. For me this year, the hill is Justin Jefferson is the 2nd wide receiver in this class, and I don't think it's particularly close.
Right. Juju is an interesting name to mention, but that's a little too looking for something, right? So,
well, I just mean like, it was one particular skill set. I'm not – it's not a comp at all. They played differently, but
– that name triggered. But the minute you said it, I was like, oh. Like, I've been wrestling with Justin Jackson. I'm trying to avoid the conversation. All right. Let's do Vega Deets here. Justin Jackson played for LSU in the SAC. SAC is a decent conference. It's had relatively recent hit rates over the last few years. It produces some players, guys. I can see Slot. He was actually fairly efficient. The average player with top 24 season averages 2 yards per team pass attempt throughout their college career. He was at 2.5. His best yards per team pass attempt was 2.8. The average for the top 24 wide receivers is 2.6. So he's actually fairly efficient, whether he's playing in the slot or not. That's especially when you tell me the role. I was actually just trying to quickly scan over to yards per reception, which is the best guide I have for what type of player he is, which is terrible. But 14.6, again, if you're telling me he's playing shorter yards, that shows the efficiency right there to go that high. But the average for most slot receivers I've gone back and profiled is around 15. So I can see him being close to the line of scrimmage than some.
And he does kind of a combo, though. Like he's this jack of all trades from the slot. So he's not necessarily just running routes close to the line of scrimmage. He can get downfield very well too. And so, you know, he's got this ability to be kind of the skeleton key in your offense. Whatever you need, if you need him to stretch the field, he can do that. If you need him to, you know, break a zone and sit down in the lanes in a zone, he can do that and get yards after the catch. So it's not just a slot in the traditional sense of the, you know, hey, Jarvis Landry is going to catch the ball 6 yards from right. the line of scrimmage and then run for six more. It's he can do that, but he also can go down the field.
I think that's what's showing up. The lower than I expected to see yards per reception, but higher than you can hope to have in yards per team pass attempt. There's a conflict. There's a different skill set there going on.
Yeah.
And you're describing hopefully what I'm saying. And he was overproductive in his last. His average team market share was above expected, which is good. You know, you want to play more productive than average. I would say that in his last year, his confident expectation is 17.2. It looks like he played as a wide receiver 2 for his team.
Yes, he did, because he had the best receiver in the country on his team.
Who's that?
Jamar Chase. Ended up with 84 catches, almost 1,800 yards, and 20 touchdowns for Chase.
But I would connect that, and that's something of why I've been hesitant on just because he's coming out third in my current pre-draft model. I've been fiddling with it.
I love it, Peter. We're on the same page.
I got questions about this current state of the model. He was wide receiver 2, but and that connects what we were saying earlier about the Henry Ruggs expectation going to the NFL. Especially when you consider its role. But again, he was very productive in the role he was playing, like more than Ruggs was productive. And he broke the averages, even playing not as a wide receiver 1, which can be seen as more impressive. He only played one game in his age 18 season. The next two seasons, however, he played more than enough to have done well. And he did, is the thing. Like he has domino ratings of 30% in both of his next 2 years. It, you know, it varies around 30%. 30.7 to 29. Okay,
we adjust that up?
Yeah, we sure can. we can actually adjust it down a little bit. Like at age 19, that's well above average. A 30% dominator is well above average for. And so, if you were looking at the graph, that's where he would break that line, that red line I'm always putting on there. Whereas his last season at age 20, being around 30 is actually below expectation because you expect to do more as you move forward. And he actually played extra games that season. So you're looking at something of a drop in production, but he was playing as a 2, if you're telling me there's high competition, and his teammate score is 2% above average, so I'm seeing that as well. I just accidentally went over to the combine stats here. Yeah, 4.43 and the stuff you were saying, decently sized. Like, I like him, and the model loves him right now, the pre-draft model. His production is good. I wish I could throw some nastiness to you. It's just either side of that age 19 season was underproductive, especially given the role he was playing. And so, frankly, was Julio Jones. He's got a massive spike year at age 19. Now, he's not as productive as Julio Jones at age 19. But again, the pattern isn't overly concerning. And speaking of Juju, that's what the efficiency is one thing that reminded me of after you said it. So this is after the fact, not a clean connection in my mind. But Juju was definitely more efficient in yards per team pass attempt. He was a great highly efficient player in college. He also had an earlier breakout age. He broke out really at age 18, I believe it's right. My spreadsheet keeps getting it wrong because he was actually 17 when he first played, and I keep forgetting to adjust those dates. But yeah, he was an age 18 breakout, if I remember right. Justin Jefferson is an age 19 breakout, if I remember right. So he had 20% and 30%, as I just said. Yeah. So even if you go to that higher threshold that Rotoviz likes, he still breaks out at 19. That's one thing that saves what I term peak producers. Like, you only have one good year. But if you're doing it young, that matters more than if you're doing it old. It's a very important definition of this breakout. So actually, yeah, I like Jefferson. I can't throw too much shade at him.
That's it. This is, we're done. That was fantastic.
Okay. So yeah. CeeDee Lamb, huh?
Yeah, I think so. I really do. I had him. I mean, I have him fairly close to where I had AJ Brown graded out last year. So right. I mean, he's one of these players where I really like him. He does a lot of things well, and he's so smooth, Peter.
They draw them level with each other, man. It's going to be an interesting year to watch. Interesting 3 years to watch, to be fair.
I'm glad you're here. I'm glad you've come full circle, because it really was. It was like 5 or 6 weeks ago, and I'm listening to you laugh about how this class is going to blow up in everybody's face because you've been hearing about it for 2 years.
I've been telling me to trade players. I would not trade for these rookie picks or the season I got from them.
So I'm not
seeing Calvin Johnson, which is the level of expectation of some of the values I was told I should seek out some of these wide receivers. I'm saying, man.
That's a different conversation.
Seconds this year.
That's a different conversation. Like, I'm with you on the, you don't trade production now for the promise of production in the future. Like, I'm with you on that. But if we were advocating, and this is kind of one of the things that I like to do, is I'll target a class that I think is going to be very good, and I will target it a couple years out. And what I will do is make trades where I get a second round pick in next year's class and a first round pick in the class afterwards, and people are willing to do that. That's not a big deal. And if I'm in a rebuild and I'm looking and I'm selling off, some of my older assets or especially running backs, because the shelf life on them is not great. I mean, this year, if I have a team that I'm rebuilding and I have players, close your ears, like Marlon Mack and that group of running backs that is probably on their way out in the next couple of years, those are players that I'm trading. But it was the 2 years ago saying trade, get a second in 2019, get a first in 2020, and end up with two or three picks in this. If you had three picks in this first round and got two of these running backs and one of these receivers, or one of these running backs and two of these receivers, or draft a guy and then trade two of these picks for productive veterans, and all of a sudden you have rebuilt your roster in the span of 2 years, where sometimes it'll take, three or four. If you're trying to rebuild with one pick a year, it takes forever. But if you can identify a class and attack it in a way where you're gaining those assets before they become super valuable, and then you're either spending them on these players or you're trading them for players that are now attainable where they wouldn't have been. If you had a 2020 pick in 2018, nobody cares about that. But if you have a 2020 pick right now, or if you had a 2020 pick 3 months ago, man, you could have got the moon for that. And that to me is the way you play the game with these picks. It's identify early. It's listen to people like Ray Garvin. It's listen to Debbie podcasts. It's pay attention to the rankings on DLF and identify those classes before you get there. Make your moves before they become, before you get priced out. And then when the price goes up, because it's predictable. You know that the price is going to go up when you get closer to the rookie drafts. You know this week the price is going to go up because it's the combine. If you had the 101 and somebody is looking at Jonathan Taylor and looking at that he ran a 4.39, I'm sure you could get a huge windfall for that right now, and you may be able to get more for that in 2 months, you know, when your rookie draft happens. So, like, or 3 months. Like, that's the thing that
And it's a really good process on the average when you're approaching Dynasty. My point only about this class was that first-round picks were trading at equal value. They hadn't increased up towards the draft in 2019. Like, to the point they may have had to add a fab dollar to trade into the 2020 class. So it works great if you can identify a class and the typical value system is working.
I'll say, which
if,
is...
If, like, the 2020 class was so hyped that they're equal or even greater value in some cases, in some trades, then you're losing the value, the potential of that process. And that, so that was my thing about... this class,
but again, that like
if you traded a first and a second last year and you got AJ Brown and fuck, you overdrafted Terry McLaurin, according to an asshole like me, then you were really you're staring down the barrel of perhaps Antonio Golden Gandy at the end of this first round if he really gets good draft capital. I would not make that trade, or yeah. Zach Moss late, or and you drafted, you know. I can't even think who what running back was in the second round. Like that would have been an unusually high trade, but you there was still an equal value, and I already got a year of those good players from the first round, and there were a significant number of good players last like year. And that's all. It's not like I don't appreciate like you should. Like last year when everyone was after 2020 picks, if you were interested in that process, you should have like maybe approaching 2021 would have been the idea, because right now, again, we're doing the same. Yeah. And those were trading at lesser value than 2019 picks. So it's not like, anyway,
well, that's,
you so, get it.
Yeah. So, well, so I've got notes from a show we did July 31st of 2018. Okay. And the notes are 2020 running backs, Cam Akers, DeAndre Swift, Jonathan Taylor, J.K. Dobbins. Okay, that's the first four. Mm-hmm. And then I've got Stephen Carr, Najee Harris, Travis Etienne, Trey Sermon, A.J. Dillon. So, like, this is what we did was we did a show and said, look, right now it's 2018. You're coming up on your 2018 draft. What you need to be doing is looking ahead. And when that clicks over to 2020, when MFL rolls over and your league has 2020 picks available – those are the picks that nobody is thinking about right now. And those are the picks that you need to be going. If you got in on them last year in 2019 at your 2019 draft, you're too late. And that's the thing. I mean, and it's tough. It's hard to look that far ahead, which again, it's the same thing for me as when I listen to you and listen to Josh Hermsmeyer and listen to George Kritikos and listen to, you know, all of these people who talk metrics. I listen to Devi podcast too. I don't play Devi, but I want to know because that's part of strategy of Dynasty.
Again, is
get ahead.
No problem with it. My only thing was that the 2020 class, like no one's excited right now about the 2021 class or the 2022 class as everyone was
23 of
2020 in 2018. Like it was consistently higher than average, and like it's an easy way to, in my mind, an easy way to foul a very good process is when you try to apply an average rule to a situation that's above or below average, right? Especially if it's above average, because again, it's where the picks were trading equal value is instead of you actually getting a value boost for going further into the future. That's where it started to get
right
wrong for me, if you know what
but
I mean.
that was at the point where everyone was on. I mean, it's the same thing, whereas if you bought stock in Apple, you know, in the late 70s, early 80s, you're feeling good about it. If you buy stock in now, it costs you whatever Apple stock costs.
2020 was closer to Apple stock than it was, you know, a company you've never heard of earlier than most. And that's right. What I mean. Like, you and other good Dynasty players are telling everyone right now that 2022 is a good class to target because it's 2 years out. You should get value diffs. That would be the process going 2 years out, right? But in 2018, I feel like it really started to build around then that it was more like not just occasional good Dynasty players or, hey, this is a good process. It was almost already accepted that 2020 was a great class already. Yeah. And we should target that class. Like, we're not saying all as one unit that about the 2022 class. We might say that about the process, but not because 2022 is like a guarantee. And that's kind of what we were saying 2 years out, or close to 2 years out, about the 2020 class. Well, and so it was an unusual year earlier than
It was really easy to identify. And to me, it was similar in 2017. We're in 2015, and actually somewhere on our feed, there's a podcast where Kyle and I talk about, we're in 2015, and I'm talking about doing a rebuild because I absolutely pooched my startup draft. I ended up with a bunch of players that were past their prime, and I didn't have a great plan going in. And so I started looking, and you could see the 2017 running back class. You could see it from 2 years out, and the entire show was me talking about how I traded Brandon LaFell and a piece to get a second in 2016 and a first in 2017. And by the time I was done with the trades, I ended up with four first round picks in 2017 and ended up with a team that had McCaffrey and Dalvin Cook. And I didn't even remember who else I drafted. It was Mixon, because I ended up with Mixon and traded him to Kyle for Odell Beckham, which is another story for another day. But like, to me, you can identify draft classes, and not every draft class is created equal. But if you're sitting there and you see four or five running backs that are legitimate, you know, NFL players, and you can see them coming from a mile away. Like, I've been watching Jonathan Taylor for 2 years now, going, oh, I can't wait until he's there in 2020.
Yeah, it's just where it wasn't like we were cleverly identifying a class. Like, everyone had identified it, so there was no value differential. Yeah, and I'm trying to put this in context. It's like in the middle of the 2018 season, the middle of the 2019 season, however that works out to a year and a half ago, you were trading essentially a pick that you could be more definite of where it would land for a pick you were definitely not sure of where it would land, because it's 2 years out or a year and a half out. So, like, you could have ended up very easily. I was trying to look up the ADP of rookies last year, but I can't remember where, like, AJ Brown or DK Metcalf went. But my memory is late first round.
Metcalf was going like five or six. AJ Brown, I got anywhere from like 108 to 112.
So, say you were accurately identifying your pick as a later first round pick, mid to late. Like, that's normally the picks we feel more comfortable trading with. So it's fair to say you could have got DK Metcalf or AJ Brown. Like, it was a fairly target rich environment last year, it turns out, for mystery pick, and not even tanking it, not like the 112. Would you trade AJ Brown or DK Metcalf and the year of production you just got from them, who should all be more valuable than one first round pick at this one point? So it's kind of a foregone conclusion. Then JK Dobbins, Jalen Reagor, you know, like, I like Jalen Reagor, but the consensus on him apparently is him at six. T. Higgins, Henry Ruggs, Cam Akers. And that's six to nine.
Right.
Like, that's what I mean. Like, a year and a half out, that's the type of value differential we were talking about. Like, if you were getting that in a second, whatever, than that. But instead, they were trading it equal too soon, way too soon.
Yes.
Because it would have been identified by everyone way too early, except me, who knows nothing about college. So I was just completely confused, and I wish I'd listened to you in 2018. I guess that would have solved it. You and Kyle could have saved me.
Well, I mean, don't let the cat out of the bag. We're dummies. We like it that way. We got a small circle we run in. So
that was our secret. This is all just a secret promo for how you should listen to the Dynasty Dummies podcast on the Dynasty Funhouse Podcast Network.
Yeah, the DFPN network. Nice. The only network in town.
If you have been previously, I want to do a PSA now, because if you've previously been subscribed to the Dynasty Dummies podcast and you're wondering why you haven't heard from Kyle and Zach for a while, go resubscribe. I think something about the switching, the combination, like that's why you might not have heard from him in a while. Like I just looked up one day because I talked to Zach and Kyle fairly regularly on Twitter and in group chats and stuff. So I hadn't really noticed I wasn't hearing from him. But it turns out I've been unsubscribed because of the switch over the DFPN there. So might want to go resubscribe, because it is it's definitely one I listen to every week. Really enjoy it. And obviously, Zach's stuck in this long with me. So he's a pretty cool dude to do that. And Kyle's fantastic. He's got free data, man. He's got free spreadsheets on, I don't know if he's collecting the history of them. Does he do the past ones? Are they available?
He's got, I think, 2017 and 2018. He, cool.
I like don't, histories, man.
I don't think he has last year's. He just had a baby today.
Yeah,
today.
Like he's doing this. And like everyone says, I work too much. He's doing it well. Literally, I don't know how he's keeping up with it, but he does some great stats work, and his spreadsheet is way more colorful and nice than mine. It's worth checking out the draft cheat sheets that he puts out again for free. You know, he's a good guy, so definitely check that stuff out. Anything else you want to mention? Plug it.
The only thing that I've got to plug is. We've got you mentioned the network. We've got a new show on the network that is Kevin Cotillo and Dynasty Outhouse. And it is a trade. It's a trade show. It's split takes. It's they're brilliant. And the idea is they both go separately record their thoughts about a trade. So there's no splatter. There's no, you know, nobody is coloring another opinion. And then they come back and they listen to what they recorded and then argue about it.
So it's literally an anti-adjust podcast. Yeah, like that's not a just tweet. Yeah, right.
It was
fantastic.
It's amazing. Yeah. Because you always get this little bit of, you know, bias and you know, somebody else is shaping your narrative. And with this, you get exactly what they thought unfiltered. And so like, if that's a reason to subscribe to the feed, like the Dummy Russ Show
and Kevin are just really good.
Oh, they're amazing.
On top of it.
They are amazing.
So, yeah, this episode, Split Takes is what it's called, right?
Yep. Yep.
And they were talking about a super flex trade, Russell Wilson on one side and Baker Mayfield on the other side. Both had, like, the analysis of the trade itself is really interesting. Like, I'm bad at trades, so I'm trying to learn. And it was a really interesting way to hear the way they broke it down and broke it down separately and came together. It was, I randomly happened to listen. Like, it was the next one up after I listened to Dynasty Dummies. And I was like, oh, cool. I didn't know Russ and Kevin had a new show, but it was very cool. So, yeah, definitely recommend that one, too. All right, I guess I better let you out of here. I don't know what I'm going to do with a two-hour recording.
Chicken a crow, chicken a crow, crossing the road, go.
Clicking a poll,
Twitter is gold, player unfold, so.
Oh, no, that was a fantastic.
Appreciate it. Thank everyone for checking out. If you stuck with it for me, this might have been a 30-minute podcast. Or it might have been a full-part series. Whatever. I really nice stats. Listening and follow Zach the film is an art,
always a fight back and forth. There is no order, they disorder more and more because the players ain't no older. They some hoarders or some mortars dropping bombs without no borders. They got that eye like Mordor, keep grinding numbers like Mordors. I don't know anymore. I am at a crossroads. Chicken a crow, crossing the road. Go, clicking a poll. Twitter is gold, player unfold. So, Jake on the table and Nate on the place. No, Pete and Numa. It's a pleasure analytical. Chicken a crow, crossing the road, go. Clicking a poll, Twitter is gold, player unfold, so. Jake on the table and Nate on the place, though. Pete and Numa, it's a pleasure analytical.